and I sat down to meditate by the river. It was the first time I didn't meditate because it was on my to-do list. From that point onwards, for me, I've realized that everything in life is a bit of a game, and the game is fucking tough. It's not just easy, but you might as well engage in a game that's pretty fulfilling for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Live Into Your Brilliance podcast, the place where we shine a light on the innate brilliance of human beings and have a lot of fun blowing up the thought-created illusions that get in our way. We have got a cool guest on our show today, someone who myself and Bill has only got recently been getting to know, and so I'll be excited to introduce to you in a moment. But before that, as always, I am joined by Billows. How are you doing, my friend? Just back from a rooking session, so looking a little bit pink in your cheeks.
Yeah, I'm matching my salmon top. You can only see a pair of glasses, a beard, and some teeth. I went on a lovely ruck this morning, but I decided to up the weights after weeks of at the moderate weight. So I put a 30-pound plate in my rucker and headed off to Starbucks as per usual on the same route that you strolled with me a couple of weeks ago. And it was glorious. It's still wonderful fall weather here. Gorgeous out there. So it was lovely. Lots of friendly dogs on the trails as always. So it was lovely. But I'm before we introduce our guest, mate, I just wanted to ask you, how are you and Shani feeling about your big boy going walkabout? He left on his big adventure. How's the empty nest?
Well, it's a very interesting question, and I will give the very short version. Very emotional on Saturday when he left. So for those that don't, Finners is my eldest boy, 18, was heading off to travel around Southeast Asia for 3.5 months. He left on Saturday, lots of emotion from his mom, from me, and actually from him, which was nice. At least we knew he loved us. He headed off, and we picked him up from the airport today because he had to come home today because he ended up getting an interview with one of his degree apprenticeships that he'd applied for face-to-face back at the end of this week.
No. So
he has done the shortest trip in the world, and he is back in the UK and having to do this job interview before he then heads back out again. So all that emotional build-up, the nest was empty for about 72 hours, and now he's back. So for another episode, I will talk through just how life sometimes, no matter how much you are pretty sure you know what's going to happen next, turns out we didn't have a clue, and all this big build-up was for nothing. So we will be going through it all again at some point soon. I'm not quite sure when he's going to head back out. He might wait until the turn of the year and get this process finished. So we'll have to wait and see. But there you go. So, but mate, should we get our guest in? And I will talk about that some more. But I knew you'd have a bit of a giggle when I was wondering if you're going to ask the question. I was thinking, oh man, this has turned into so much more of a less dramatic event than we thought it was going to be. There we go. Let's get our guest into the room because I'm excited for where this conversation is going to go. So today we are joined by Harry Verma. And like I said, I only got in touch with Harry very recently. And in the conversations I've had with him so far, I'm just intrigued about what the life he lives and also what he's creating for others. So Harry is the founder of Innate Experiences. And through Innate Experiences, what he is doing is creating experiences that inspire deep connection. So that's deep connection to ourselves, to others, and to the natural world. But this is where I think it gets really interesting, because it's also about still thriving in modern society. So something that we've kind of talked about, you know, it's like it's not an either or. There's a real both and here. And so this global community are about getting people or helping people set out on the middle path. And that is the path that Harry himself would say that he walks, which I can't wait to hear more about. Before that, he ran a co-living company for 5 years, which was all about creating entrepreneurial communities around the world with the purpose of creating purposeful lives. And like I said, he's deeply passionate about merging the conscious paths with modern life without compromise. And that to me just sounds like the coolest thing ever. So Harry, you're welcome to Live Into Your Brilliance. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Al. Thank you, Ilo. Appreciate the intro. That was a fantastic intro. I don't think I could do better myself. I was like, as you were speaking, Al, I was like, oh, this is phenomenal. I need to record this. I need to memorize this. this is how I need to introduce myself. So.
Harry, we have a question that we start off with all of our guests, because we want to kind of get straight into the meat of the conversation. And what I loved, you know, I said to you, hey, I'll give you this question and you can prep for it. And you said, no, like, I don't want to know the question. Just like, let's rock up and see what unfolds. And I wanted to point that out because I just think it was so cool for me, because I thought, oh yeah, because this is one of the things we talk about, how we have everything we need in the moment if we're prepared to just show up. And so I loved when you said that. And now you get to hear the question for the first time. And the question is this, what is one profound truth or myth-busting insight that you've discovered that if everyone else could see it or hear it, it has the possibility to be life-changing for them?
Yeah, I think for me, the tough thing about answering this is I know exactly what I want to point towards. But you know, you can say the word moon and you can point at it, but you can't do more than that. The person has to actually see the moon to experience it. And I think it's an experience more than anything that I want to... the myth that I want to, let's say, debunk can only be debunked through direct experience. So my proposition, for those who haven't experienced this, for those who have, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But for those who haven't is... which is one that you hear a lot as well, I think, but it doesn't quite land until you experience it, is the kingdom of heaven is within. And, you know, you can... This thing we call the mind, the ego, is an amazing thing, but it really is just a tiny part of everything. Like, we're completely connected to everything that's going on. And almost everything that happens in our lives are not controlled by our mind. Our mind is a phenomenal machine at explaining... trying to come up with reasons for why what just happened is actually sort of within its control, and therefore we're still in the driving seat. And I think if you can have this direct experience beyond the self, and there's so many ways to get to this point, but if you can have that experience, it completely flips your relationship with life and with the world. And I think the way you start seeing the actions you take, the way you react to things happening around you, can really turn on its head. So I think that's my biggest myth to bust, is the idea that you can find happiness without. And okay, some people might at this point go, well, that's obvious. You know, that's I hear that all the time. It's like, yeah, cliches exist for a reason. they've survived a long time and there's something in them. And I think what the implication of that can be for a lot of people is, what would your life look like if you were to be more connected, if you were to step out of your mind every day, if you were to give a bit more credit to the natural world around you, give a bit more, let's say, respect to the people around you and the influence they have on you, and stop pretending that you were in control of everything. Like, how would your life actually shape from that point? So, yeah, I think that's my profound truth or myth. I don't know how this lands with you. It's not... Yeah, maybe not a specific one, like whether sunscreen is, you know, a hoax or not, but it's definitely one that I felt that there's almost been a before and after in my life that I've had from that experience of something beyond the self, of complete connection to everything around me.
I love that. And I think you're the first guest we've had who has invited the listener to go and ignite the fuse that blows up the myth. So thank you very much.
No problem. Yeah. I mean, there's no choice, right? I mean, what are, this is the thing about talking about this myth being busted is like, it's like talking about a different state of awareness or a different state of consciousness. It's like, I mean, you can't really describe it, can you? I mean, it's like a new color, like good luck. You just kind of have to see it. But I think it's, there's something enjoyable about pointing it out. And what I find is, you know, the people listening to this podcast in this moment, there are no coincidences to this happening, and that maybe something in them is, you know, something resonates in them. Almost like, ah, oh, you know, like I recognize something in this that might be true. So they may not have experienced this moment of connection of beyond the self, but there might be a part of them that knows something's there. And actually, what's really funny for me is when I listened to your introduction today, you talk about people's innate brilliance, right? And you use that phrase a lot. And I find it quite interesting that that's, I mean, the name of my company accidentally is called Innate. And it actually comes from that moment of beyond the self and realizing actually, you know, innate is almost like it's your birthright. It's within you. That actually this feeling of brilliance, of connection, of fulfillment, equanimity, doesn't require stimuli or things around you. That is the grand myth of our time, maybe upon which our society is built upon. So maybe too many people can know it, if the current way of things are to stay as it is. But yeah, it's an interesting entry point. I don't know how this lands with you, Al, but I think that's my myth of the day to be busted.
No, I like it. It lands really true. Actually, it lands for me in a couple of different ways. And because there's the, what you're pointing to, but then you're pointing to something, but what you said, I really connect with, which is you can, what was it you said? You can point to the moon.
That's the one. You can describe it and you can point at it, but ultimately the person has to experience looking at the moon.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, that was
it. Themselves.
And it got me just about that. The illusion also is the idea that we can find this, what we're talking about, that, you know, the truth, perhaps, that the kingdom of heaven lies within, that you can find it by listening to podcasts, or you can find it by reading books. But the power of experience is the bit that really took me, you know, that actually the illusion is that somehow this exists in literature or it exists in, you know, spoken word. And it's like, no, the truth is that it lives in the experience of it. And the way you said, you know, there was a before and after for you. And so I guess I'm really curious for you to just to explore that with you a little bit more. Like, how do you guide people, or where is the possibility to experiment and experience this? If someone was listening and saying, damn, I love the sound of that. But how do you take people in this journey, or what has been your journey? So you're like, well, this is how I found the truth of this in my own experience.
Holy God, Zal. Yeah, these are like deeply, deeply profound questions. I mean, I do not have the answer to this question, but I have good and bad news. at least what pops up in my head. I think the good news is, you know, if you're hearing this and it's resonating, you're probably on your way there to that experience. The bad news is you cannot control how it appears. So, you know, I think I'm a type A person. Like, you know, before I had my experience beyond the ego, like I was building a startup, a co-living startup. Before that, I worked in startups. I worked in sales. Like, you know, I have this mindset of like, you know, I'm going to make shit happen. Like I'm going to visualize something. And then I know that I have enough willpower, you know, to step into it and to, you know, use my skills to manifest it. And the frustrating thing about having this kind of experience is I don't really think, you know, the more you try and control it, the less likely it is to come, you know? It's just like, the problem is you have to let go. It's like, good luck trying to let go. That's a paradox. And so I meet all these people also in what I do, especially in the meditation part of what I do, who are like, I'm really trying to let go, Harry. And she's just, oh. And I'm like, oh, man. Oh man, you've got a lot of pain coming your way. So I think the truth is you experience it by letting go. You cannot force that moment. You know, it's almost an accident from my experience, and everyone I've spoken to, it's an accident almost, like, because you can't force it. But you can make yourself more prone, you know, more prone to this experience of beyond the self. And I think one of the ways to do that is to practice things like meditation, to practice things like breath work, to actually listen to, let's say, podcasts and read certain books where maybe you can, you know, that can help you towards this state as well. I think that these all do contribute, they have a part to play, right? You can also shortcut your way there if, you know, you're very cavalier like me and just go straight into ayahuasca before you've ever had any psychedelic in your life and just have 3 ceremonies in 3 days and go straight there and go through a lot of pain along the way. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that for everyone, because the danger of going there is that you may not have the foundation to hold the experience. And so you may be in for an interesting experience integrating that into your life after you've had it. Yeah, I'm rambling a bit because I don't have the answer. So I can only point at things and hope.
Well, that's okay. But I don't think any of us want you. I think we want you to come back to this, your own personal experience. So did you, because you said you are an A-type, you are driven, you built this incredible startup. And then it sounds like you had a life-changing experience. And then you've mentioned going all in on the ayahuasca ceremonies. And so, yeah, tell us a little bit about what happened for you, just because sometimes I think people can hear whatever they hear, but it sounds like an intriguing story.
Yeah, I think that suits me founding a company as well. I think there's a certain personality type where, with, you know, the glove fits, you know. So building startups and now what I'm doing with my current company. And I think I just apply that mindset to everything, to be honest, including the spiritual journey. So I essentially built my company to a team of about 15 people. It was my first ever company. So if you can imagine, I was 27 when I started my first company. And over about 2 years, grows to a team 15. Like, we raise some funding. We kind of, you know, have revenue of over $1 million a year. And as you do, you know, as a young human who starts winning, building a company, you kind of walk around like a, you know, strutting around like a puffed up peacock, over-identified with my company, like completely. And the pandemic came along and made travel and also community pretty untenable to run, let's say, and to put it lightly. The uncertainty was actually worse than the regulations they put in place. But, you know, for a co-living company that was only 2 years old, it was a disaster. And I spent 2 years trying to make sure my company survived, trying to make sure, like, my employees were getting paid enough, that they had a job, that my investors were happy. And also trying to hold on to a relationship with an amazing woman that I deeply loved at the time. And while that was all going on, like, while I was being strong for everyone else, I wasn't necessarily keeping an eye on myself. And I essentially was so focused on the survival of everyone else around me that I forgot to focus on my own survival. And as the pandemic ended, actually, I mean, it's a funny story, but it sounds funny now. It wasn't funny at the time, but I remember as the pandemic ended, I got offered about $500,000 by our investors to kind of bring this co-living company back to life, you know? And I remember just feeling no excitement. I remember my chest was tight, my throat was tight, and it got to the, I have enough willpower that I can ignore that. But then I started waking up every morning singing, I Want to Break Free by Queen. So I feel like that was like my subconscious. Looking back, that was my subconscious just like turning up the obviousness of the signals. Like, is he getting the message? Should we tighten the throat? Is he getting it now? No, he's still trying to rebuild the company. All right, sing I Want to Break Free. Surely that's got to do it. And that did it. But yeah, stubborn fucker, that's what I am. But yeah, I remember closing my company, losing the relationship I had as well, and just feeling this sense of, okay, something in my belief system is leading to this life around me, right? And this life around me is not one that's nourishing me right now. Like, I don't feel great. So something's off. And everything I do is a means to an end. Like, I build a company to make money to prove myself to my relatives and my friends. I create a relationship so that I can build a family. I build a family so that I can... And so, you know, I even meditate to become more productive. I, you know, do yoga to become more flexible. Like, everything is a means to an end. And I remember just thinking, like, something is off. Like, something is wrong in my belief system. I don't know what it is, but this can't be all there is to life. And that was actually when I decided, I met ayahuasca through a friend who mentioned it. And for me, it was, okay, this seems dramatic for someone who hasn't really had psychedelics before. And also, this is hard to explain without sounding a bit 4D, but something in me was seeking something powerful enough to take down my ego. Because I knew even then that I have extremely strong sense of self. Very stubborn, very strong willpower, able to build companies, you know, like very quickly. Like I knew I needed something, you know, that wasn't a luxury yoga retreat. Like I needed something to dissolve my ego, to actually be strong enough to take it out. And that for me was why I visited, and why I, for me, three ceremonies of ayahuasca in 4 days. I mean, holy gods, I had no idea how intense it actually was going to be. And, you know, but it really took me through a lot of pain and through a lot of trauma, like a lot. To the point where I actually tried to physically run out of the center on the second ceremony. Luckily, one of the shaman used to be a bodyguard, so he caught me 3 times when I tried to escape. That was lucky. Extremely strong man. And would just carry me back in. but, you know, it took me to the point where in the third ceremony, I remember the intention of the third ceremony I had, and I was just like, I just want to dance. I just want to dance. I have no intention anymore. I'd have no requests from life anymore. And that was the moment where in that ceremony, you know, again, without expecting anything, I was, you know, given a glimpse of, yeah, a glimpse beyond the mind, a moment of samadhi, as you would say in Eastern language, or, you know, a moment of nirvana. And my God, do you not stay enlightened? Let me tell you that. I think it lasted, I don't know how long it lasted, but I was very quickly a flawed, messy human being. But to have that experience, yeah, it just shifts everything within you, you know. I think after that was the first time I remember sitting down to meditate a few days after my third ayahuasca experience, after that kind of opening. And I sat down to meditate by the river, and it was the first time I didn't meditate because it was on my to-do list. Like, I would always be like, I need to meditate because Tim Ferriss says it's good, you know. And I remember just sitting by the river, and it was so peaceful and calm. And I was like, I'm just going to sit here and meditate. And there was no reason to do it either. I don't know how many minutes or hours I sat, because I just didn't care anymore. I think that was the first time I, you know, almost meditated to meditate, like truly meditated as well. Because, you know, you're not suddenly, you know, this mindset of like, oh, I'm going to do 20 minutes today. Oh, I did 25 minutes. It, again, is missing the point. And yeah, I think from that point onwards, for me, I've realized that everything in life is a bit of a game, right? And you might as well engage. And the game is fucking tough. It's not just, you know, easy, but you might as well engage in a game that's pretty fulfilling for you. So,
what a fascinating story. The question that popped into my mind, and it's something, you know, Al and I have a good laugh, because we refer to the practice, the daily practice as great practice. And we often say it with an accent, trying to emulate Thich Nhat Hanh. Practice for each listener will be something completely different. You know, like you said, meditation or breath work, or just taking great delight in living in that awareness where you take that sacred pause between stimulus and response, and make smart choices, hopefully. The question that I had was, when you emerged from this and you meditated for the first time, for the sheer joy of meditation, what was the journey for you in terms of adopting a practice, and how did you kind of take your first step towards what you were seeing. And then I'm sure that that has evolved immensely. And so I'd love you to kind of run us through that, because I think for the listener, this really strikes at the heart of what the invitation is, which is, don't take our word for it. Go play.
Yeah. Great question again. You know, I was very lucky in that as I was coming back into my body, I was kind of surprised that I was still back in my body and you know, because I'd let go of my life. And as I came back, I was very lucky in that I could actually ask questions to that presence and pretty clear answers. The biggest feeling I had, which I want to share first before I share my own specific practice, is exactly what you said, actually. It was like just this feeling of like, geez, just live your life. Like do something intentionally every day that you just fucking love. You know, like it wasn't like, oh, you must sit in Zen practice and you shall have your back straight and, you know, you shall have muladhara in your hands and you shall... No, it was just the feeling was so... It was so clearly like, sing a song once a day or dance because you just want to dance. Like just, you know, or go for a swim in the ocean just because you want to... You know, there doesn't need to be... If do one thing per day where there isn't a reason for you doing it beyond the doing of it. So that was the most important thing. And it was really... if I reconnect to the feeling, it was so much... It was so strongly like that, you know, more than anything else. And, you know, I think along with the recognition, which I always really try and come back to, especially when people irritate me, which is quite regular, sadly, which is that everyone is doing the best they can, you know, and it's like, so that's the simple foundation of what I believe in the most. Yeah, I mean, my personal practice, I like Al said, I believe in the middle path. Like my belief is that everyone is love and light when they're talking and when they're with themselves on the surface. But, you know, go and, you know, do things in the world and you'll find out who you really are and what you really are. You know, and that's kind of cool as well, you know, because like life is pretty unforgiving, you know, as well. It's not just... You know, the thing I felt strongly was that life is a dance and life is a struggle, right? And so, you know, you don't want to forget either side of that coin. So I tend to do an hour a day, pretty much. It can vary, but I like to do stillness and movement is how I see it. Like a bit of breathing. I like to meditate for at least 5 minutes a day. I do think there's a reason meditation is seen in such high esteem. It's because it's the most diametrically opposed to the way we're programmed today, which is like rise and grind, hustle, do, produce. And meditation is the most, you know, at least in breath work, you can be like, oh, I did this many breaths. You know, I can, you know, hold my breath for this long. You have something you can hook your ego onto. Like meditation, I think is really something worth keeping, even if it's just 2 minutes a day, because it is the closest to just being. In that it can truly be seen as pointless, because in a lot of ways it is, right? As long with being profound, it's also just like you're just sitting there, you know. I mean, come on. So I like that, and then I like to move. Similar to you guys, as we were talking today, just being humble, like knowing that you're not fully able to engineer your own inner world. So get help, right? Like go if you go for a barefoot walk in the forest, like just see what it does to your mind, see what it does to your body. Like you don't have to like, you know, like try and solve these things by yourself. Once you recognize that there are things out there that can help you, you know, if you're lucky enough to be near a river or an ocean, you just jump in it. I mean, it's great. I'm sure people are, you know, you guys are nodding your heads. Like, it's like, you don't necessarily have to like, you know, find stillness and happiness within yourself. You can just cheat, like just get some help. You know, so I think that's a big belief I have as well. So the practice is, that's kind of my attitude towards it. And then, like I said, live your life, like go to the gym, lift heavy weights, like, you know, play sports, build a company, like try and create, you know, create relationships, make mistakes, and then keep coming back to the practice every day so that you can just center yourself, you know, give yourself a bit of love and also reflect on where you've been, you know, things you've been hiding from yourself, like shadows. In yourself, you know, because we've all got lots of those. I've got lots of those. probably you guys have too. But, you know, and it's also, you know, a constant discovery of the new ways you've been, avoiding certain parts of yourself, you know. You know, how much am I busy in building my company right now because I need to be busy because it takes a lot of work to build a company? How much am I busy because being busy is an amazing way of me avoiding being by myself and confronting the fact that I might feel scared about something or lonely about something or confused. And it's like, don't always want to open that box. Keep that one shut. Answer some emails.
That's a big box for us probably to explore in and of itself. Because I think when you talked before about your ayahuasca experience and overcoming the ego, actually, I had a real sense of it. That is a non-trivial thing, because we all have a pretty robust ego and intellect, and it is incredibly valuable in its own way. You know, like it's not to kind of try and throw the ego down as being like some nemesis. And yet it is a powerful thing to be able to let go of the ego and to see what happens. And I think it's the ego that it doesn't want us to kind of sit with our feelings, whether it's fear or whether it's the ego, to me at least, seems to be the part of me that's going, hey, we don't need to do that. Like, let's get on with doing some real shit in the world, because that's what's going to make you feel better. And that's, and the expression that you said, kind of like before, as I heard it, was before, I guess, the pandemic, your kind of the experience of the world delivering to you what the world delivered, and kind of in, and then, and this new opening coming available to you, was that everything was a means to an end. And it strikes me that what's now seems more true, at least in listening to your to how you describe things, is that that feels so much more softer. That it's like everything is a means to itself. It's like you're doing more because you want to, not for any other reason. I'm kind of going a little bit of a ramble, because there's two things here that I wanted to explore. One is just that simple practice that you pointed to, and we always say it's like when we're talking about practice, I think that is a very powerful, simple practice. Doing one thing every day because you would love to do it. That sounds so remarkably simple to me. And yet I actually think that becomes quite tricky for people. I spoke to someone yesterday who was telling me how they had a really tough week and their kids had been super ill, and actually on Sunday night they thought their kids were better, and one of their children said, could they climb into bed? And they said, yeah, sure. And then the child proceeded to vomit everywhere, all over their bed, all over everything, all night, so he barely got any sleep. And he said, I'm just not in a great space at the minute. And he said, what makes it worse? He said, I've really just forced myself to do work today because that's what I should do. And we had this exploration, which was, well, if you didn't do what you think you should do, what is it you would do? And he stopped for about 20 seconds and he said, I would have loved to have gone to the beach. He said, I even had the thought, just go to the beach. And then he said, and then I heard this voice say, no, you need to work. And we had this incredible conversation about like, how powerful could it be if we listened to that, to the whisper, you know, of the universe that feels so good in the moment, versus, to my mind, that was the whisper of the ego, you should work. But the deeper voice was, just go to the beach, go to the beach. And he would have loved that. And so I hold that up because I think that practice of getting quiet every day and just listening for what the answer is, what would I love to do today? What wants to come through today feels just profoundly impactful to me, because the answer is often going to be, I think, run counter to what you would imagine the answer would be, you know, and I think it would be a cool experiment for everyone listening to, you know, as they listen to this, to get quiet at the end of the podcast and go, what is the thing that I would love to do today? And then act on whatever shows up. And it comes back, Harry, to what you said at the beginning. You can point to things and you can describe things, but what's going to make the difference is whether or not you're prepared to run the experiment and experience it. So I kind of, that just felt so impactful for me, and I wanted to share that. The bit I wanted to come back to, and I'm curious in the context of people who come to your, I don't know whether it's right in, within innate experiences, whether to call them to retreats or to your experiences, or for yourself. You know, this idea of being with, perhaps it's your fears or, you know, putting down the busyness and just being with whatever's going on for you, or where's the possibility in that? And how do you guide people to do that in a way that perhaps doesn't feel as scary as it might do for lots of people? Because I think there's a just a simple, I don't know how to do that, like sounds like a good idea, but I am not in the habit of doing that. I'm in the habit of running away. So what do you think is an offer for people? What do you perhaps do in your experiences that help people be able to just kind of be with whatever's going on with them from a more peaceful place?
Yeah, it's a great question again. I think it's, and I also want to speak to what you were talking about with your story as well, which is super interesting, which is this, you know, I think if you have young kids, it's a little bit different because they're literally dependent on you. But, you know, so I can give that maybe a bit of a hall pass because I'm not a parent myself. I don't know, you know, I can't talk to that. But for most people, you know, I think busyness can be, it's like the ultimate illusion. You know, it's like the default answer, the default state. I'm busy, busy week, this, you know. And I find it interesting. Yeah, I do find it interesting to kind of call that out a little bit. It's like, I mean, like you're choosing to be busy, right? Most people, at least, they're subconsciously somewhere choosing to be busy. And it's interesting to kind of say to yourself, well, you know, for type A players, you know, we hold ourselves to such high standards in the way we execute things, the way we make things happen. It's like, well, why not also apply that same level of standards and competence and unforgivingness to the illusion of busyness then, you know? And that's quite a fun way of turning your, you know, what could maybe be a bit of a curse in this game into a blessing again. It's like, you know, type A players are very unforgiving, right? And so we can just look at ourselves and go, hey, why am I saying I'm busy again? Like, you know, I come on, you know, like at some point, once you see through it, you can start holding yourself to a higher standard, which is interesting. So I guess part of what I do on the co-lives, the retreats, the experiences I have is call that out as well. Not in a mean way, because that doesn't usually work. But you can kind of just invite people to see through the illusion with you. I think the other way is you just have to load the dice in your favor, to be honest. Like I said at the very beginning, like you can run uphill to, let's say, create more space within yourself to enjoy your life, to experience the present moment. And also, you know, when you experience the present moment, guess what you're going to experience on the way to the present moment? All your shit, all your anxiety, because, you know, all of your traumas are attachments to the past, and all of your anxieties are you trying to control the future. So by definition, the more you head towards the present moment, the more you're going to bump into the past and future things tied up inside of you. You know, it's tough to find that space in the modern world because we have screens around us, we have phones, we have obligations, we have emails. You know, you open your laptop to write something creative, and then the other tab open is your email, right? And at any point it can just ping. So I think what you have to do is acknowledge that, you know, in strong moments you might be able to create space for yourself, but it's very unlikely over the course of time that you'll win. And what I do at Innate is just try and help people out. Like, so we're in, it's easy to be connected to nature and to slow down if you're living right next to a forest or even in a forest and you feel the energy of the trees slow you down more into the natural rhythm of things. You hear the sound of the river. It's easy to get out of your body if you can just jump in a river because it's 2 minutes walk away from where you're living. It's much easier to be present if you give your phone to someone, by the way. We've done gatherings. We did a 5-day gathering recently, which is like a co-created festival of 100 people. And there were no screens allowed, right? Like we actually took everyone's screens away. They handed them into us. And I think that's a great way to start cultivating space, to just, you know, at least in my opinion, get a bit of help from your environment, engineer the things around you, to actually give yourself a fighting chance here, you know? Otherwise we'll just like, you know, we're like obese people trying to quit sugar while our fridge is loaded with sugar. It's like, you know, first thing you tell that person is don't buy the sugar, you know, make the barrier bigger. So, that's kind of how Innate does this, at least. Like we don't try and preach to people. We just, you know, load the dice in their favor. And I think it's something that people can do in their own lives as well. If they were to take, you know, maybe even just 15 minutes, grab a piece of paper and just be like, all right, how can I cultivate more space in my life, in my head, to experience the present moment, to move my body, to enjoy myself? Because it all comes from having space. You know, and just write down a few ideas. I mean, one of them is like, can you block off a certain time of your calendar? Like, do you need to have your calendar full all the time with all those meetings? Can you not take meetings before 12 o'clock or something? You know, create some kind of rule. Can you, you know, get yourself near nature on the weekends? You know, there's lots of small things people can do to load the dice a bit more in their favor. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where I land on it and kind of how Innate tackles it, at least. There are also more direct paths as well, you know, like there are the, you know, meditation retreats, ayahuasca and breath work and, you know, all these kind of more powerful ways to enter the present, but that's also not feasible all the time, is it? You know, like if you want to live your daily life, it's I think more just about these small things adding up.
And Harry, I've got a question, and I'm sure the listener would be curious around your answer on this. The idea of the great practice and carving out time, and I think some of the very practical things that you've just mentioned now are things that people can grab onto and go, oh, I'm going to try that. I'm going to grab a piece of paper and I'm going to jot down a few things about creating space for myself, or I'm going to block off time in my calendar and see what kind of comes up. And those are all wonderful. And I've done variations of those, and I still leverage those, and I love it because I love just playing with this. But the one question that I have for you is, as you undertake your practice, your great practice, and you develop your grounding, and your grounding becomes richer and deeper and more pervasive, what do you experience, or what have you noticed over time, if anything, of how that permeates and threads through your day when you're not consciously practicing?
Oh, I was actually thinking about this when I was on the beach today. That's kind of weird, right? I was thinking about this exact thing. So I have a lovely answer pre-prepared and packaged for you. Do you know what? Like, I think I'm going to give a bad analogy to help. Not analogy, but I'm going to give a bad measurement to help this out. But it's nice. I used to study economics, like numbers. So like, let's say that you can live in a way that is more aware, that is more, let's say, conscious. And someone might say, well, what does that mean? Maybe you're more present to what's happening. Also, when something, maybe a stimulus hits you, you have more space between the stimulus and your response to kind of decide how you want to actually react, right? And maybe you find that, not on purpose, but by accident, that the things you do are also a little bit kinder as well. You think more kindly of people, especially when they do things that are, you know, harmful. So let's say that's, you know, being more aware or more conscious, right? Just inviting the listener to go with me on this one for now, and put the doubting cap on after I'm done. To give it a number on a scale, you could say, you know, I think we're baseline 40 to 60, right? Like we have this baseline consciousness or awareness. And, you know, sometimes, something bad happens or someone walks slowly in front of us, you know, which is tragic, or someone's driving below the speed limit in front of us on a one-lane street and it's like, oh, disastrous, you know? No, you know, I'm making light, but, you know, also, you know, you can have tough moments, but generally, you know, you kind of between 40 and 60, and then, you know, you might have something nice happen to you, or, you know, the barista gives you something, some extra whipped cream or something. And, you know, you're kind of between 40 and 60 on this scale. What I think happens is you can have, you know, you have two types of intentional alterations of consciousness that you can do, let's say. One is like where you really go deep into something like holotropic breathwork or plant medicine or Vipassana, and you're really like, you know, pulling your awareness to a very high state for a very short period of time intentionally, right? And encountering a lot of your own traumas and bullshit along the way. So you have those moments, but what I think you don't want to access those states of consciousness on a daily basis because they're too intense and they're too much. So I think what the daily practice does is, by definition, it doesn't need to be anything too sexy or too amazing. You know, that's why I was saying just do something intentional that you love. Or take 5 minutes to just simply sit. And what you're doing is you're kind of every day pulling yourself to a 65 on this scale. And then over time, you accidentally, without noticing it, your baseline becomes 45 to 65 in consciousness. And then, you know, almost without noticing, I think you'll start doing a practice that is suddenly bringing you to 70 every day. And so people have to experience this to actually see if this works or not. So you can put your doubting cap back on, which you should do, because everything that is said by anyone should also, you know, be run through your own veil of personal experience, right? To be verified or not. And then take what resonates, leave the rest behind. But I think it has huge benefits. I mean, just doing coherent breathing and 5 minutes meditation, again, you see over time how you suddenly have more time when someone does something mean. You see how you have more time to react, or you catch yourself when you react, right? You catch yourself quicker and you're like, actually, you know, I'm just perpetuating a negative cycle here. What am I doing? Like, I'm going to step out of this. So that's kind of my experience. I'm not sure if the analogy worked. When I was by the ocean and the beach, it really felt great. But now that I've said it, I'm like, this is a very strange story just there. But that's kind of where I'm at.
I'll give you full plaudits for that. I love that. And visually, I'm a very visual person, so I could see that scale and the way you change your baseline. That's a lovely visual. So thank you for that. And I think hopefully the listener got a lot out of that, because that was perfect. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I loved it. And I also think it talks to a phenomenon. You know, there's a guy who's written some incredible books called Dr. Benjamin Hardy, and he's written them with Dan Sullivan. But one of them is called The Gap and the Gain. And it just made me think about that. You know, like, we've got a choice where we choose to live. Like, we can either choose to live in the gap between where we are and where we could be, or we can really start to live in the gain, like seeing everything that we have created, everything we've created, or how far we've come. And I just thought about that, you know, let's just say that, and I love that, you know, 40 to 60, if that was the kind of average starting point. You know, and sometimes people go, you know, I only moved it from 45 to 65. And it's like, no, you moved it from 40, 60 to 45, 65. How amazing is that? And there's still more. And I think that one of the beauties of, you know, seeing that, you know, everything exists kind of on the inside out, like everything we're looking for, the kingdom of heaven lies within, is it's not an end point. Like, there's not an end point where we get to, where we go, oh, that's it. Like, that's it. That was the 100 out of 100 thing. I'm there now. It's like, that's my personal opinion. I don't think that's on offer. But what is on offer is just to keep seeing, oh, wow, like, I used to be that way, and now I'm this way. And then there's more, and then there's more. And that's kind of what I took out of what you said there, is can we take the joy out of living and seeing all that we've created, all that we've experienced, the whole gamut, you know, including, you know, as you were talking about your, you know, the business experience, everything. I was like, wow, like, look at that. What a rich experience. Probably not one of the ones that we go fits in our preferable bucket, but equally part of the narrative. And so that's what I particularly liked about that visual. And I also quite like frames and been able to kind of put lenses in that help me see things. And Harry, we also have a closing tradition on our podcast, which we didn't tell you about. So you'll be pleased to know you get two opportunities to be totally surprised by questions that that your just your natural wisdom will answer for us. This one's slightly more on the fun side, which is if you could create a bumper sticker for life, what would the bumper sticker say and why?
Don't take it all too seriously. It's only the one life you have. And the reason why is because it's funny, isn't it? Because it's like, also do take it seriously because it's the one life you have, but also it's, you know, like, because the truth is, like, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, when you said what you said, I was smiling so much when you said it, when you said, I don't think we can live life from 100. I don't think 100, you get to 100 and that's it. And I was like, I'm pretty sure if anyone tells you they've done it, like, they're like, yeah, that's it. I'm 100, you know, like, I'm enlightened. That's it. I'm there. I'm like, don't trust those people. You know, it's this kind of, you know, we can talk about how the kingdom of heaven is within and how don't take it too seriously. Choose the game you want to play, this really fulfilling. And also, you know, I mean, if you give me 100 million, I'll probably be quite a lot happier. I'll probably do a lot of things that make me feel better quite quickly, you know? Like, so it also is, the other side is also true. And like, don't lose sight of either one, you know? Like, it's like people lose sight of both sides too much, which I understand because there's a bit of a paradox, you know? But don't lose the paradox that life is a dance. It's happening in the here and now, and there is no reason beyond it. And yeah, life is also a struggle, you know, and things are hard, and you don't have to make it hard. Like, things will happen that will make your life tough. You know, and this kind of, what is it? Everything is exactly as it's supposed to be. And also everything is a coincidence. And the truth is, we don't really know which one. So, you know, you only have one of these lives, as far as I know, in this particular way, we have only one life. And also, you know, yeah, play the most fulfilling game you can. So that's my nonsensical, yet hopefully making sense answer for my bumper sticker.
Yeah. I love it. I'm in the process of getting all of the bumper stickers as they've been created turned into actual bumper stickers. So there'll be one with the Harry Verma bumper sticker for life, which will be created. So I will, that will be going on there with your name on it. And Harry, for anyone listening and they're like, I would imagine, like me, super curious about the innate experiences and what you offer and the different co-living experiences, where can they learn more? Where can they find out more about you? Where can they connect with you?
Yeah, they can look up innate_experiences on Instagram, or type in innate.global on their browser. Innate is spelled INNATE. And they'll see everything there that, yeah, pertains to what I've been building and continue to build. Second home for people on the middle path like myself. So
yeah, and I do, if you're listening and you're curious, I recommend taking a look there. The experiences look super fascinating, and you know, what an opportunity to go and try out this middle path experience and see what it opens up for you. Bill, has any final words from yourself before we bring this to a close?
It's just been one of those sessions again where I'm looking at the timer now for the first time and I'm like, oh my God, how did an hour fly by so quickly? I mean, there's so much more that I could ask, so much more I could listen to, and it's been an absolute delight. So Harry, yeah, thank you so much. Please come back. You know, we would love to have you back on the show. But thank you so much. It's been fascinating, illuminating, and I'm going to go and I'm going to experience more of the moon as a result of this. So thank you.
That's good. That's a really good takeaway, to be fair. So thank you for hosting. Thank you for having me. Thank you for listening so well and asking some rather beautiful questions. I really appreciate it, Billows, Al. Yeah, very much appreciate it.
No, it's been a real pleasure, Harry. What a treat. Thank you for coming in and dropping your wisdom. It's like I said at the beginning, I was fascinated you in one of the questions, and to me it's just been another great example of how when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, how when we just get out of the way and allow the space to do its thing, it's amazing what magic kind of flows in. And so thank you for being the magic in this conversation. And to our listeners, I truly hope that you will go and run some experiments, experience more of the moon, and see what might be on offer for you there. And until next week, we bid you farewell, go forth, and as always, live into your brilliance.
Thank you for joining us on this enlightening journey, unraveling the innate brilliance within every human being. We hope today's episode has sparked new thoughts and inspired fresh perspectives. Remember, the power to shatter illusions and unleash your true potential lies within you. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. If you'd like more insights and daily doses of inspiration, you can follow me on Instagram at @AlKennyCoaching. Or you can connect with myself and Mark on LinkedIn, where we will share articles and perspectives about unlocking your innate brilliance. Remember, you are capable of extraordinary things. Keep believing, keep exploring, and keep shining brightly. Take care and stay brilliant.